Welcome to the San Diego Psychological Association's podcast, Diving into Healing. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Carcel. This podcast has been developed with the intent to inform and educate the general public and providers and should not be relied upon for any other purpose. The content, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker and not those of the San Diego Psychological Association.
Welcome to Diving into Healing, a podcast from San Diego Psychological Association. My name is Dr. Devin Burkheiser, and I am the guest host for this episode covering for Dr. Michelle Carcel. Today, we are joined by Dr. Alejandra Postlethwaite, a board-certified community, adult, adolescent, and child psychiatrist, and an assistant clinical professor in the UC San Diego Department of Psychiatry. And today, we'll be speaking about the youth mental health crisis. Dr. Postlethwaite, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, of course. We're really happy to have you here to talk about this very important and very interesting topic.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I wanted to just kind of start with a little bit about what the youth mental health crisis is and why this is something that is on people's radar right now.
So the youth mental health crisis has been slowly becoming a crisis since, I would say, like the early 2000s, but it peaked now at like during the pandemic. The rates of depression and anxiety in youth have skyrocketed, especially since 2007. And so have the emergency room visits. So President Biden, as you know, he declared a national mental health crisis for adolescents in December. And it's just been a very significant problem, and it's huge. And there's, you know, lack of capacity in the mental health system to treat all the kids and the children in this country. So it's become a crisis for both those reasons. The kids are suffering more. They're voicing their suffering more, and there's lack of enough services, not lack of services, because this country has a lot of services, but just not sufficient to handle the crisis as it is right now.
In addition to depression, what are some of the things that you're seeing in youth in terms of mental health issues?
A lot of anxiety, a lot of isolation, anxiety about academics in general, a lot of loneliness, a lot of bullying, a lot of negative relationships with parents, parents having a negative relationship with their kids, not understanding them, some drug and alcohol use, just everything. I mean, everything that goes together with like depression and anxiety, a lot of attentional problems and difficulties in academics, which is part of the depression and anxiety.
And do you have any sense of what might be causing or contributing to the spike in the rates that we're seeing in these things?
Well, I think the recent spike, the spike that we saw during the pandemic is definitely associated with the pandemic, with kids normally want to be social, want to be with friends, want to go out. They like being in school, even though they can complain about it, but they like being in school, seeing their friends, the socialization, all of that. And all of a sudden, all of society went indoors. School became home. Home became school. Parents started working from home. So I think that impacted kids significantly, as it impacted everybody. And the uncertainty of not knowing how long this was going to last, how long kids would need to stay indoors. And then, I mean, doing Zoom academics through Zoom, it was, in the beginning, it was pretty chaotic. Teachers were overwhelmed. They didn't know what to do. Parents were overwhelmed working from home, helping their kids through academics. Kids didn't know how to navigate that either. Everything was new. A lot of kids' grades dropped dramatically. Kids who were like straight A students, they didn't know what to do. Some kids, you know, were in their last year or years of high school when academics is super important to get into a good college. And then all of a sudden they're faced with this new way of learning. And it was just too much for a lot of kids to handle, for society to handle. We're still living, but thank God it's better. I mean, but we lived through something new in our lifetime worldwide, and the impact, we're seeing the impact right now of how it affected our mental health, especially kids' mental health. And then, you know, if kids, should I go on a little bit?
Yeah, no, go ahead, go on.
If kids were in households where parents were overly stressed, maybe, you know, they were working too much from home and didn't know how to handle that and their kids, or maybe they lost their jobs. Financial situation has impacted everybody in the country. I mean, the stress that the parents might have been facing at their home has also impacted the kids. It's just too much. It's something that us as humans were not expecting to happen.
Yeah. And I think a lot about just, you know, obviously, like you said, everybody was impacted. My whole routine was thrown off and shifted. And I think a lot of people felt like they lost time, you know, and for me as a fully grown adult, it might not feel as impactful as a student that's missing out on their opportunity to play sports in school, and that's a limited thing, or misses big milestones like graduation or prom or this time with their friends that they really might not be able to get back. And so I think in those formative years, it felt probably much more impactful for those at that age.
Exactly. They lost part of themselves and part of their youth. And especially the older kids, especially the adolescents. It's been really hard for society at large.
Yeah. And I think when I was doing a little bit of research about this topic, I saw too that even before the pandemic, the mental health symptoms, issues in youth were rising. And to me, I think a lot about the potential role that social media might play. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about that at all.
Well, most definitely. Social media and the effect on mental health has been studied since social media started, basically, since Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. And there's a lot of evidence out there that it impacts adolescents more than anybody. The famous FOMO, the fear of missing out, the way people portray themselves on social media, which is always in a positive light, you know, or usually in a positive light. Kids compare themselves to those other kids. Then there's also a lot of cyberbullying. Kids view their value as a person with how many likes they have, which is totally artificial to us who grew up in the 80s and 90s, no? And that's the way they are viewing themselves. Like, oh my God, I got 20 likes today. Or they're lacking the face-to-face interactions with other kids and the socialization that is completely human if they are, you know, addicted to social media and all day valuing themselves with how they view themselves on social media.
And especially, I think, with students that might face bullying, you know, it's something that then becomes nonstop, too. When you are home and away from school, it doesn't necessarily end because you can still see things posted or have people chatting about you. And I think that also can make it feel like kids can't get a break in the way that they used to before social media, where they could just kind of, you know, go home and maybe feel potentially a little bit more safe and secure in that space.
Exactly, exactly. I think that the impact of social media is huge. And part of the work that I do is a lot of advocacy work with the California Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. I'm grateful that there's two bills out there looking at social media and how it affects youth and putting some parameters and putting more kind of oversight on social media in how it's used with kids. So there's two bills out there. And both of them, I think, are Senate bills, or one might be an assembly bill, and they're circulating their respective houses at this time. So I'm glad California is looking into this. This is a state effort.
Yeah, I think it's something that we'll have to keep our eyes on as providers for us, but even parents and just concerned community members, to make sure that we are doing everything that we can to protect our kids and impact their health and development and growth in a positive way. So along those lines, what are some symptoms and signs that people can look out for that might signal that a kid or an adolescent in their life is struggling?
Well, one of the signs is when your kid stops engaging with you as a parent, a kid being isolated in their room all their time, maybe in their phone all the time, stop going to the dinner tables or stop talking to people, especially at their home. When what they used to like to do, let's say if they used to like to play sports, if that changed or dropped, dropping grades is also super important. Just a general sense of, like, you know, this is a different child. He or she looks very different from how they looked a year ago. They were bubbly. They would talk to me. They would engage with friends, and now they don't care about going out with friends. They don't care about looking their best. You know, kids also stop like taking care of themselves, stop showering, stop dressing nicely, stop, you know, just taking care of themselves. So if a parent starts noticing that, and it's combined with like drop of grades or just drop of interests in general, that's a time to seek help.
How might a parent start seeking help? Do you have any tips on, you know, a parent that sees these things and isn't sure how to intervene or what to do, how they might approach the situation?
That answer can be a little bit convoluted. Totally depends on what insurance they have and what healthcare system they belong to. So that's one of the huge barriers of care in our current healthcare system, that parents don't know how to access their health, their mental health. So if you have an HMO, you need to go through your primary care physician and talk to your primary care physician or the pediatrician. In the case of kids, it's usually a pediatrician seeing the child. And so you talk to the pediatrician and you say, hey, you know, I need a referral to a mental health provider. The pediatrician would refer you. Most of the time, parents are seeking therapy initially. They don't jump into medications because they don't know the severity as of yet. So the pediatrician would refer them to an in-network psychotherapist, if you will. If the pediatrician does an assessment and feels that the child would benefit from psychotropic medications like an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety agent, some pediatricians feel comfortable prescribing those types of medications themselves. I would say most don't, but us as child psychiatrists in the community are working with pediatricians to help them, to guide them into prescribing those types of medications. There's services out there. One is called Smart Care that pediatricians can access via the phone and talk to a child psychiatrist to kind of recommend what medications, if they feel like the kid would benefit from medication. So usually pediatricians are the first line. Let's say they prescribe a medication and then they refer them to psychiatry and they manage the medications while the child sees a child and adolescent psychiatrist, which unfortunately can take a long, long time. Months. And then they access a child and adolescent psychiatrist. And hopefully by that time, they are seeing a psychotherapist as well. If they belong to a health care system, and they can be referred into the same health care system if the health care system has behavioral health in their system, basically. If they have a PPO insurance where they don't need a referral, they can call their PPO insurance and ask for an in-network provider and try to call one of those in-network providers. Some parents will have additional resources. They can go out of pocket. Unfortunately, right now, going out of pocket is pretty common because that's the fastest way to get help. In San Diego County, there's a lot of resources, especially for children who have a Medi-Cal, which right now it's managed care Medi-Cal. So it's like Molina Medi-Cal, CHG Medi-Cal. Those kids can access mental health services through county contracted clinics, and they can access mental health services through their pediatrician as well. There's way more services in California when it comes to mental health for kids who have Medi-Cal. You would be surprised, but there's way more services than if you have a private insurance. There's a lot of child psychiatrists, including myself, who work in community and take Medi-Cal. So that's the way to access. HMOs go through your pediatrician, who may or may not refer you to a county clinic. PPO go through your network. And then, I mean, I can talk about the crisis services in the county. There's a lot, and parents just don't know how to access them. Do you want me to talk about those?
Yeah, maybe briefly. It'd be helpful to hear about that.
So for example, if your child is in a crisis, there's in San Diego County, there's three places to seek help if you're in a crisis. One is Rady Children's Hospital. They have a psychiatric emergency room. So a parent can present their child to the regular emergency room. He will be assessed by a social worker and then will be sent to the psychiatric emergency room if there's an emergency, bottom line. And the child will be seen by a child and adolescent psychiatrist. The parents can also go to the Behavioral Health Urgent Care in Mid-City. There's a psychiatrist there all the time, and that's more for like urgent care, not necessarily a crisis. But from there, they can be sent to the psychiatric emergency room. The County of San Diego also has the emergency screening unit in Hillcrest, where the parents can walk in and the child will be assessed by a child and adolescent psychiatrist. If there's an emergency, an imminent emergency at home, let's say the child has suicidal ideations at home, the parents can also call the psychiatric emergency response treatment team or take the child to the nearest emergency room. So there is a lot of services. It's just that they're hard to navigate, as you can see right now that I'm explaining to you. They're pretty hard to navigate, and the parent just doesn't know how to access those services. But definitely, we're lucky here in San Diego County that a lot of services.
It sounds like if a parent is noticing something, the first thing they might do is talk to their pediatrician, yes, who can then make some recommendations. But then obviously a crisis is a little bit different. And so I want to talk about that. It just seems to me anecdotally, I'm hearing more and more news stories about suicide among teenagers and that being a growing concern. And I'm wondering if you could speak to increasing suicide rates.
So the good news is that the increase in suicide rate has not been dramatic. That's the good news. The increase in suicidal ideation and emergency room visits, especially in teenage girls, that's what has increased dramatically. I'm glad it's not the suicide rate, right? So the even though it has increased. So the suicidal ideation and the ER visits has increased like 60% since 2007. So the reasons for that, there are speculations that social media can have an impact. Social media, it has been speculated to have had a huge impact. Also, the stressors that kids are facing nowadays, the competitiveness in our society has also impacted kids significantly. When I was applying for, I went to medical school in Mexico, but when I was applying for residency and fellowship program here in the United States, it was nowhere near how competitive it is now. Like everything is just way more competitive. So the kids are facing a lot of stressors too. Even in high school, when a kid should be having fun and hanging out with friends and playing sports and going out, I mean, a lot of the kids are just like, you know, feeling all the pressure to get into school and having tons of AP classes. And getting, you know, straight A pluses to get a 4.75 GPA to be able to even think about getting into a University of California campus. I mean, it's just, there are stressors that kids whose brains are in formation should not have. I think that adds to why the suicidal ideation and just the mental health impact in adolescents has skyrocketed and worsened since 2007 on. It's just too much for kids to handle.
Well, and I can see why a 16-year-old kid who's feeling all this pressure and hasn't yet learned how to cope with big feelings might feel hopeless and overwhelmed and might kind of think about, like, I don't know what to do. How can I kind of stop feeling this way? And then would then, as a result, experience some suicidal ideation.
Exactly. I mean, we as adults, as mental health professionals and experts, need to change that. I mean, we need to start changing that. I think it's just too much for our kids, this pressure of perfection. Not only do they need perfect grades, they need to be in sports, and they need to be top in their sports, and they need to be to volunteer and to just too much. I mean, it's just incredible the pressures that the kids face nowadays.
How can we as clinicians start to change that? I'm wondering if there are opportunities for educating young people, teachers, parents, people that are really doing their best to help and support kids, how we can kind of maybe shift the way that some of this is being approached or thought about.
I think education is extremely important. Educating parents, educating children, educating the schools. But more than anything, I think legislature needs to change. It needs to be at the state level, at the national level. Something needs to change there. There needs to be more services for kids, first of all, more services kids can access. More support for pediatricians who are the frontline workers, the frontline people who see these kids. We are not frontline. As child and adolescent psychiatrists, we see the kid months after the crisis has started. So more help for the pediatricians, more help to the schools, who also are the frontline people who access, who see these kids from the start. And that the only way that's going to change is with the change in legislature, which is happening. It is happening. $4 billion were allocated to adolescent mental health in the governor's budget last year. And an additional, I believe, $30 million right now in the May revise. So it's starting to happen. We're going to see significant changes, significant improvements in the upcoming years for children and adolescent mental health in the state of California, which is incredibly needed.
Yeah, I agree. I work primarily with college students, and it often feels like they come into the university having dealt with so many struggles for so long, and they're so excited that they can get these free therapy services at the university. But what we do is short term, and sometimes it feels like they've just been dealing with so much for so long, and they've been waiting for this help. And so I really think prevention and early intervention and support is crucial.
Like how I mentioned in the schools.
Yeah.
Sometimes the teachers are the ones who notice this first. I mean, especially if the parents are working parents, the teachers pick up on that. And the schools all are stretched thin too. They don't have enough therapists. They don't have enough special ed support. So I'm very optimistic that that's going to change in the upcoming years with all the money that is being poured into the budget right now for that. Thank goodness California recognized the crisis we are at right now.
And I always think systemically, if a student is struggling, you know, what are the systemic factors that impacted that, but also what are the systemic factors that are being affected? So if they're struggling at school and the teacher's trying their best to help, but they have a bunch of students that are struggling, and like you said, especially during COVID pandemic, they're overworked and overwhelmed. And so maybe you could just speak a little bit about the impact of this youth mental health crisis to families, to communities, to schools, to all of those different systemic pieces.
Well, I'll start with families. It's been extremely impactful. Parents just don't know what to do. They had a kid who was bubbly, happy, cheerful, getting good grades, and all of a sudden their kid is isolating, failing all classes, and they don't know where to start. They don't know what to do. They don't understand the complexities that I just talked about regarding our healthcare system. They're like, what? An HMO? Who do I see? Where do I see them? What does it say? Like, I have friends who have, like, asked me, like, ay, Alejandra, where can I see a therapist? And I'm like, do you have insurance? Yes. What does it say in your card? Oh, it says HMO. Well, who does it say there? Who's your primary care? Well, I don't know. I always go to this clinic. Well, okay, let me see your card. I mean, they just don't know how to access. So it's super complex. So first, I mean, I think the parent recognizes that their child is having issues, and they just don't know how to access. They don't know how to access healthcare in general. Even sometimes, it has impacted the parents in that way. And there's also a bill that is targeting that actually right now. It's going to be providing education to BIPOC communities of how to access healthcare and mental health care through their managed care plan. I think that's huge because they folks just don't know. It's hard for us to understand as clinicians. Regular people don't know. So parents are just struggling so much because they're trying to navigate their jobs, which could still be at home. And they're trying to navigate their child's feelings, their dropping grades. Then the financial situation is not helping. But I mean, there's help out there, like I'm talking about. There's help out there, and more coming. The schools, I think, also have been significantly impacted. They opened the doors, and all of a sudden, you know, oh my God! I mean, all these kids with a lot of issues coming back to school, they're overwhelmed. Schools here have tons of resources. I grew up in a third world country. The schools where I lived didn't have even, I don't know, I mean, even 1/10 of the resources schools here have. But even with those resources, it's not enough to the crisis kids are facing right now. So I feel for the schools. They're doing their best. But again, I'm optimistic a lot of help is coming their way. thank goodness. Like everything in at the state level, it's going to trickle down slowly, but it's coming. It's coming, and I'm very optimistic about the future for the kids in this state, especially with regards to mental health. And help is coming for the parents, help is coming for the schools, help is coming for society in general.
I'm sure many people will be very relieved to hear that. You spoke a little bit to BIPOC students, and I'm curious, I think oftentimes when there's any sort of struggle that we're talking about, people from traditionally marginalized communities or groups are often hardest hit. And so are you seeing that, students from marginalized backgrounds or LGBTQ plus teens are more impacted than other groups?
I think they are. That's a population, the BIPOC community is a population I treat. So most definitely they have been very impacted. They lacked resources from the start. So, and with COVID, it's even worse. So, a lot of the parents became unemployed during COVID. So that impacted their household in general. Definitely more impacted. The schools, unfortunately, in marginalized areas sometimes don't have the resources, or they do have the resources, but it's not enough for what their kids are facing. I once asked, I have a child who is in special ed, and I remember when he started with services, it got tested and everything, it ran really smooth. And I was like, wow, I mean, why doesn't it run this smoothly with the kids that I treat? Like, we just got services like right away, like testing right away. I mean, we did need to wait a little bit, but services were provided and it just went really well. And I asked one of the folks, of the psychologists who was doing the testing, and I said, you know, why doesn't this run as smooth in marginalized communities? And he told me, well, I mean, we have the same resources there. However, the resources in the needs in some communities are huge, that the resources are not enough. Basically, they're not enough. And we need to worry in some like rural communities and lower socioeconomic communities, we need to worry about kids getting fed. So sometimes like their reading is going to be secondary because we're worried about them getting fed. So just the resources are not enough, even though they are the same overall, but they're not enough. So I think resources to marginalized communities need to be greater than those in other areas, most definitely. So there needs to be like a needs assessment, which is happening. Resources are allocated based on the area and the need.
Yeah, I think we saw a lot during the COVID pandemic how people were impacted disproportionately. You know, if students' parents were able to work from home in a higher paying job or pay for tutoring or, you know, kind of private teaching, those students might have suffered a lot less than students whose parents didn't have the means to pay for that additional support or had to work outside of the home and leave the kids to kind of fend for themselves and figure it out. And so I think it is really important to think about, like you said, what are the needs of each group and how can we meet those and allocate their resources in a way that feels equitable and fair.
Definitely. And again, optimistically speaking, the help is coming. I'm just very, very proud of how the state is handling the situation right now. I know people can't physically touch the solution right now yet, and they don't know that it's coming. Because I mean, if you're not in tune to what legislature is doing, like you don't know what's happening, but I can firmly state that it's coming, and I think we're going to be leading the nation when it comes to public mental health resources for youth.
Well, let's keep the optimism going. I love that. You know, I think sometimes it can feel like there's so many issues and challenges, and especially as a mental health clinician, we see these things every day, the things that people are struggling with. But what are some things that people can do right now to kind of alleviate and hopefully reverse the mental health strain? As we're waiting for this resources, are there some practical or kind of tangible things that you think people can do to support the young people in their lives?
Talking to your child and spending time with your child, quality time, not necessarily significant quantity, but quality time with your child, especially if you have multiple children to spend with one particular child at a time. If you're a working parent, it's really hard. I recognize that. But spending quality time with your child, talking to your child in a non-judgmental manner, trying to meet the child where they're at and empathize with your child, and really asking your child difficult questions. If you see that your child is struggling, like asking your child, like, okay, tell me what's going on with you. Hey, I'm not going to judge you. Are you struggling with your sexual identity? Are you struggling with drugs and alcohol? Are you being bullied? Like difficult questions, asking your child those difficult questions. And again, in a non-judgmental manner and with love and with an open embrace, like, hey, if you are struggling, I am here to help you. I am going to support you. I remember who said, like, we should always discipline with love. So I believe in that, like, to always set limits and stuff like that to your child, but always with love in a way that they can come to you and tell you anything. And obviously, if your child is breaking home rules and stuff like that, you should discipline with love. No, but if your child is really struggling, an open embrace and in a non-judgmental manner is what is needed. And understanding your own healthcare plan, I think that's also very important. Understanding who your primary care is, understanding who you can access, how to access them, how to navigate your healthcare system in case your child needs a higher level of care, a psychotherapist, a psychiatrist, educating yourself on what's out there. If you have a child who has mental health issues, educating yourself on what's out there in the community. How can I access all this? Because there's tons. San Diego County has tons of resources. Just parents don't know. So educating yourself, going online, finding resources and offering those to your child and just educating yourself in general and being able to recognize when your child is in need. I mean, kids open up to adults if they feel that you're not going to judge them. They open up to you.
Well, and I think what you said about asking is so important, not just for parents, but teachers, if they suspect, if they see changes in a child, to ask and check in, for pediatricians to do screenings, you know, just to kind of, I think, normalize that, hey, sometimes young people struggle with mental health issues. I want to ask if this is something that you've been dealing with, or I'm noticing this, and I want to kind of ask and check in and see how you're doing. We can all be advocates in that way. And I really appreciate, too, about just being aware, trying to get informed about the resources. Schools might be a great first step for that. If a parent has no idea how to navigate, you know, maybe just checking in with a school counselor and asking for some options for recommendations for services that might be available in the community in general would be helpful.
Oh, schools are great. Knowing how to access services through the schools is a huge plus. In the clinic that I work at, we have like a resource specialist who talks to the parents and teaches them how to access resources through the schools. Because parents don't know either that they can access this huge panel of options through the school. I mean, there are school districts who even have like an intensive outpatient program for the kids. If your kid is struggling significantly and tons of services have been provided and nothing has helped, you can always ask for an IEP and an individual educational program and ask for a higher level of care. This is the right of the parents and the right of the child. Every child has it deserves that, and every child has that right. Education is key. Resources to schools and to public mental health are also key.
Yeah, I really appreciate that point about, you know, we have the right to advocate for our kids and appreciate the advocacy work that you're doing. And we as clinicians can also continue to do some advocacy to make sure that our young people have the resources and support that they need and deserve.
The biggest advocate for the children are the parents, most definitely. I'm glad you mentioned that. I always tell the parents, call and call and call. It's because they haven't called me back. Call, you call. I mean, don't worry about bothering, you know, the schools, or for example, if they're seeking mental health services through like a county contracted agency and they're on the wait list, call again, call them, ask them what number on the wait list you are. Keep on calling. You're not going to bother anybody. Just continue to advocate for your child. So that's really important.
Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Postlethwaite. We appreciate all your insights and the great information that you shared.
Thank you for inviting me.
The information and advice offered is not intended to treat or diagnose and is not meant to replace any other professional consultation. If you'd like to know more about the San Diego Psychological Association, go to our website at sdpsych.org. That's sdpsych.org. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, take care of yourself and be well.